In 1944, Nazi propagandists visited some of the Third Reich's most dreaded death camps to make films of inmates playing soccer. The goal was to convince the rest of the world that Jews were not being treated badly in places such as Terezin and Westerbork. One of the films shows a team of Terezin's prisoners playing against guards in a courtyard before hundreds of inmates, men and women clad in suits and nice dresses, and galleries of children looking on from balconies above the makeshift pitch. Most of the spectators were most likely murdered not long after that game was played. But most of the players on Terezin's prisoners' team probably survived longer, as did players at other camps, simply because they could play soccer a little bit. One such player was a Dutch athlete named Meyer Stadt. Only a Game's Gary Wallach has his story.
In 1939, 20-year-old Meyer Stadt played soccer for the Dutch club Xerxes.
I mean, he was decent, I suspect.
That's journalist Simon Cooper.
Dutch soccer, Dutch sport then was all amateur, but he was good enough to briefly play top division soccer in the Netherlands, to play in the Feyenoord Stadium, the biggest stadium in the country. So, you know, he was in the game. He was a player, but not a star.
Stad was also a successful track athlete and a ladies' man who loved adventure and a little bit of danger. His physical fitness and ability to live on the edge helped him as a Dutch resistance fighter and as an inmate at several concentration camps, and when he took 10 bullets. Here's John Brown University professor and Holocaust historian Kevin Simpson.
It's a remarkable story of resilience, which I think speaks to some inner force within Stadt. He had some reserves. His body was able to endure those injuries.
By 1939, Holland had enjoyed over 120 relatively peaceful years, but Nazi forces invaded the Netherlands on May 10, 1940. Fortunately for Stad's family, they had moved in 1939 from Rotterdam's Jewish quarter to The Hague, which at the time remained relatively intact. Unfortunately for them, Dutch citizens were forced to register shortly after the Nazi occupation began. Again, Simon Cooper.
Many of his family registered as Jews, saying, well, you know, you have to do this. And most of them in the end were killed, like 80% of Dutch Jews were.
It was a complicated time. Stad's family, like many others, hoped that registering truthfully as Jews would help keep them in the good graces of the Nazis. But Stad and some others knew better.
When he went to register, he knew the clerk, and the clerk said, you're Jewish, aren't you? And Stad said, no, no, just give me a normal pass. And he took on the surname of his stepfather, who was a Gentile whose surname was Bowens. So he went around as Bowens, and that made him less visible as a Jew, which was his aim.
Very few of Stad Xerxes' teammates knew he was Jewish. He was terrified someone would find out. By 1941, the Nazis had banned Jews from participating in sport, so Stad, or rather Bowens, left 1st Division Xerxes for a less popular 3rd Division squad, where it was less likely he'd be outed. And he began a second double life as a member of the Dutch resistance.
He helped place Jews in hiding places. He says he helped the nephews or great-nephews of Albert Einstein hide in the Netherlands.
This was dangerous business. In the murky underworld of the resistance, there were Nazi collaborators looking for Jews and for the people who hid them.
There was a Jew called Weinreb, who was of German or Austrian origin, who hid Jews but then would betray them to the Nazis for money. So Weinreb was a terrible collaborator who sent many people to their deaths. And Stad at one point found himself working in the same organization as Weinreb.
Stad accepted an assignment from Weinreb to escort a Jewish woman and her child to a safe house in Amsterdam.
He arrived at a house and somebody said to him, don't go to that house, it's being betrayed.
Stad retreated and rode the train with the woman and child back to The Hague. Decades later, the Dutch government branded Weinreb a traitor. Stad remained active in the resistance, and he took bigger risks.
He said that he and a friend once drowned two drunken German soldiers in a canal. So he was living on the edge. He was very much a lawbreaker. And that was unusual in the Dutch resistance, because what it mostly did was deliver illegal newspapers, which, you know, gave people the non-Nazi news. But he actually went further, both in hiding Jews and in violent actions and killing people. So he was kind of sliding between the law and just trying to survive while also taking huge risks in the resistance.
Meyer Stadt was a patriot, But Stad may have created dangerous double lives for himself for other reasons. Simpson and Cooper agree on that.
There's something about him that says, I'm going to make my own way.
He was in semi-criminal circles in parts of the war. He had a gun, which was very rare. There were girls. He remembers lying on the beach outside The Hague with friends, remembers burgling storehouses at the harbor, selling cigarettes on the black market. So he was a young man, and I think he had a very exciting war.
But in spring 1944, things perhaps got a little too exciting. After he spurned the advances of a friend's wife, she turned him into Nazi officials. Stad was deported to an internment camp in Vught, Holland.
But they didn't know that he was Jewish. They just knew he was a resistance man. So he was interrogated in prison. He was beaten up.
The guards at Vught had a reputation for exceptional cruelty. When Stad arrived, he might have feared that he'd suffer the same fate as many of his fellow resistance fighters, summary execution in the surrounding woods. But German authorities recognized Stad as a soccer player and placed him on the prisoners' team. Stad scored a goal early in his first game and then collapsed on the field. Malnutrition and disease were common at Vught. But Stad's reacquaintance with soccer would be brief, and his fortunes took a terrible turn. In September 1944, as Allied forces pushed into Europe, he was deported from Holland to the German concentration camp Bergen-Belsen and then transferred to Buchenwald. It was well known at the time that soccer had sometimes flourished in those death camps. Perhaps Stad hoped to play there as a brief respite from the drudgery of camp life and hard labor. Again, Kevin Simpson.
The players who played in these factories of death almost always had privilege. Sometimes if you were a well-known player, word might have traveled ahead of you. And so when you arrived in a place, you were a known quantity because of your sporting expertise, and you were pulled into some teams very quickly.
But Stad was not that fortunate.
By the time he arrived in the German camps in late 44, there was starvation, there was death by the day. By the time he got to the East, there was no football. These were the most brutal, awful months of the war.
Stad worked the last few months of the war at a salt mine outside Buchenwald.
And just before liberation, he and the other miners who were prisoners were told they were going to Buchenwald, the concentration camp where they'd been. But then suddenly the train stopped and the doors opened and the soldiers opened fire at them. And Stud jumped from the train and the last thing he remembered was a burning pain. And then he came to in the sick bay at Buchenwald with about 10 bullets in his body. And it turned out that he and the other miners who had been murdered had been returned to the camp, and the nurses were charged to incinerate these bodies, and they found that Stud wasn't dead, and so the nurses swapped him for a corpse from the camp and they smuggled him into the sick bay, and his wounds were dressed with rags, and a French prisoner who Stud says was a former professor of medicine removed the bullets from his body with a penknife, and most were from his arms and legs. And one bullet had glanced off his head, and Stud showed me the bump on his forehead where there's still a mark. And so miraculously, he had survived this.
Meir Stad eventually made it home to Holland. He never again played high-level soccer, but he would win a couple of 3,000-meter races, establish an ad agency, and become a millionaire. He stashed money away because he was afraid the Nazis would come for him again. Stad died in 2005. But Simon Cooper met him in 1999 when he was researching his book Ajax, The Dutch, the War, the Strange Tale of Soccer During Europe's Darkest Hour. He described Stad as friendly and fun-loving, at least on the surface. Stad loved to tell the story of how he, through his business contacts in Argentina, almost placed a young Diego Maradona on a Dutch team. And he spoke often about how his athletic training gave him the physical strength to survive the war. But there was another side to Stad that emerged by the end of it.
He was in the sick bay in Buchenwald with a Belgian, and the Belgian said to him, I'm going to die, but you'll survive, and afterwards you'll always be happy because things will never be as bad as they are now. And the Belgian was wrong. You know, Stad was never happy afterwards, or never fully happy. So I think it's a lesson of just the horrors of persecution, the horrors of conflict, and how it can happen in the most peaceable and unlikely places. And so what I think he got from that and what I got from that is just the fragility of peace and happiness and stability. It can be gone in an instant.
For Only a Game, I'm Gary Wallach.
You can learn more about soccer during the Nazi occupation of Europe in Kevin Simpson's newly released Soccer Under the Swastika, Stories of Survival and Resistance During the Holocaust. And you can find links to the video of soccer inside the Terezin camp at onlyagame.org.